Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So, Chad, it's been an interesting week, one filled with the ravages of storms and natural disasters. And our hearts and our minds and our thoughts go to all of those devastated by the flooding in Texas. And we express our deep hopes for a speedy and quickly aided recovery. But in terms of movie news, we've pretty much been pretty dry, right? Not a whole lot going on.
Yeah. In terms of sheer volume, yeah, it's really slow.
So Chad, Hollywood prepares now for the slowest Labor Day weekend in 25 years. There are no new major releases on the books. The biggest, widest release is a re-release of a movie that was released originally 40 years ago. It is not expected to even hit the top 10. Hitman's Bodyguard is expected to hold its own for a third straight weekend. And Dunkirk is expected to continue making money. But overall, the box office as a whole is suffering about a 17% drop-off from a summer ago, and on the whole, pacing about 8 to 10% behind 2016. Your thoughts, sir, on this gaping hole of an August?
Oh, I don't understand why the studios decided to not release anything big in August when we've... In previous years, we've come off of, like, you know, Guardians and Ninja Turtles and...
Suicide Squad
had these August release dates. And this year, they, like, loaded them all in July. Like, Apes could have done well in August.
Getting an Oscar push.
I did see that.
Getting an Oscar push, which I'm very glad of. Although, you know, the idea that box office in the 21st century has to be... correlated with Oscars is nonsense, considering that most every film that wins an Academy Award for the last 10 is not a huge box office hit.
Yeah, but I think that's where the problem comes in, because the audience is like, well, I like all these movies, but the Oscars don't. So forget the Oscars. I see why people want the push. I understand. But it has ebbs and flows.
Yeah, so. Wonder Woman and Apes both getting huge pushes, although surprisingly Fox has been very mute about Logan. Which is surprising, because it had box office success and it had critical success. So Apes only had critical success. The box office, the numbers were more in line with Apes, with a Rise, than they were with Dawn. So,
but I just don't understand why they decided to not release anything big. Especially, I mean, we're looking at Hitman's Bodyguard being number one 3 weeks in a row.
A movie you will catch on HBO at 3 a.m. and be completely okay with.
Exactly. Like, that's all we have to offer. Like, all the big movies have played out, and we're left with just these scraps. And then again, they decide not to release anything this weekend. I don't get it.
So here's my question, right? So you look at that calendar originally, all the way back in January when we did our preview show. The thought was that Dark Tower was going to be this mammoth behemoth that was just going to run the entire month of August. That's fine, but, like, as we got closer, by April, you started hearing the negative word of mouth on Dark Tower. Why would you not have steadily crept back into that August release window to challenge them? Because Dark Tower bombs horribly, stays atop one weekend, ends up at number 5 the following weekend, has a huge second weekend drop. And, you know, the Emoji Movie and you know, Hitman's Bodyguard. And like, I'm in the theater every Thursday night, right? I haven't been to the theater since Dark Tower, and that was begrudgingly because I knew what I was getting myself into. It was, you know, like plunging a needle into my eye. But, like, they have not given me a reason to go. Literally, they have not given me a reason to go. And that makes no sense to me. Even if with the natural disasters, which would have brought down your box office anyway, because you would have had you know, a large number of screens in Texas that wouldn't have been available. But, like, if you'd have moved Kingsman up...
Exactly.
...into August, if you'd have moved Ninjago up into August, both of those films would have done really well. If you would have moved The Great Wall from February into August, it probably would have made more money.
It would have been number one at least one of those weeks.
Probably two.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a really bleak week, August, and the crazy thing to me is that people like The Hollywood Reporter are coming out saying, well, this is very, you know, industry insiders are very disappointed, bracing for the worst box office in 25. Well, it's your own fault. Like, no one stepped up, no one saw a gap there and decided to try and take advantage of it. Like, you know, Fantastic Four, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, the first Ninja Turtles movie, Suicide Squad, which was a huge August boost to last year's summer box office. Not there. And it's really weird to not give people a reason to go to the movies during a time when... I get there's back to school and paying for back to school supplies and all of that, but like if you give people a good movie, they will come out.
Yeah, like if you take the second Ninja Turtles movie that came out last year and put it in this August, we'd be getting a third Ninja Turtles movie because they would have just made a whole lot of money.
I mean, it's just I don't understand the reasoning and the logic behind moving. I don't.
Especially if it's like if your reasoning is. Dark Tower is probably going to make money. Let's get out of the way of that. I get that it's Stephen King, but it's not a...
It was originally supposed to be a July release, and they pushed it to August.
Yeah, and it's not like a known... I mean, I know it's not a known property in terms of movies. A lot of people might say, oh, Stephen King, I'll go see it. It's not the type of property that I want to run away from. Like, okay, I might give it a week. Maybe two. But that's it. That's all it deserves. And if it crushes me... Oh, well, I took the gamble. If it doesn't, well, I'm going to reap the benefits.
Yeah, it's just a really, really crazy thing to think that we are in the middle of this situation now where, like, there just hasn't been a lot to go and see. And, you know, you get movies like Leap and, you know, Hitman's Bodyguard and, you know, it's just a really weird thing that there's a big gaping hole in August that, like, it's just not been there in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And then you just get shocked and awed at, like, I wonder why our box office is off by, like, 16%.
Yeah, it's because you didn't release... Well, one, you released a bunch of crap movies, and two, you decided not to make any money in this one month.
Right. So, let's move on. So, Chad, there's the wonderful world of Marvel. Marvel Studios is gearing up for their... Inhumans TV show, which has had its premiere episodes run in IMAX theaters this week, giving people a reason to go to the movies, even if it is to see a TV show. And getting mixed with okay reviews. Not great. Kind of reminds me of the reaction to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Your thoughts on the reaction to Inhumans and kind of the adorable dog of it all?
So, I've only heard... negative reviews. Like, every headline I've read is like, Inhumans is in IMAX this weekend. Don't go see it in IMAX. Or watch it on TV, for that matter. And the cast has been coming out saying, you know, you gotta give it a chance. Just let it run its course.
It's only supposed to be like 8 episodes anyway.
Yeah. And I think that'll be the only 8 we get for this show. So
proving once again that Perlmutter did not know as much as Feige. Perlmutter was like, you're going to make an Inhumans movie. And Feige was like, I don't really want to make an Inhumans movie. And then Perlmutter gets moved over to DTV. And magically, that Inhumans movie gets pulled off the Marvel calendar and into TV production.
I think it could have been a good movie. I think the show has parts that would make it good. It just doesn't seem like they all...
Adorable dogs of it all.
The reviews I've heard have been so bad, I haven't even looked to see what Lockjaw looks like. So... I'm sure he is adorable, but I'm probably going to watch the show when it comes out, but I'm not going to see it in IMAX, which is what I wanted to do when I first heard this news.
Yeah, I mean, which is what's unusual to me is the fact that We have a show that is being produced on a movie budget on HBO with a huge cult following, and they've only done one time in a theater and made $1.5 million, I think, off that episode of Game of Thrones, and they've never done it again.
And they can do anything. They can do whatever they want.
Yes. And that's just unusual to me to see HBO bypassing all that. Although, I was interested to see they have finally officially greenlit True Detective Season 3, which looks like it could revitalize that particular property. So,
I hope so, because Mahershala Ali is in it, and I'm a fan, so I want to see everything he does do well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, take some heat, take that heat that you got off of Moonlight, direct it toward this, which is a cross-generational, multi-generational thing where the story is going to arc over like 20, 30 years, so...
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that's going to go. I would imagine we get that next summer, particularly if we're not getting Game of Thrones until 2019, which sucks. But
hey, that series finale pretty much, you know, gave you enough to ride off of for...
No, it didn't, because it was only 7 episodes, and I understand that episode was an hour and a half, but still, it's only 7.
They're all going to be that way, I think. I think that they're pretty much committing to 90-minute episodes going forward.
That would be okay. I can live with that.
Yeah.
Since there's only 6 of them.
Yeah. So, as far as Marvel news, so, like, Inhumans is having their deal. They're getting ready for Thor Ragnarok. The press, the advertising and marketing campaign for that should start ramping up in early September. And we got some news on Spider-Man. Homecoming is now crossed $300 million domestically. It is crossed $700 million domestically. It is on pace to finish in between Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Amazing Spider-Man 1. Not the $1 billion Sony was hoping for, but as you've pointed out on this podcast many times, you know, have him show up in the 2 Infinity War movies, build his character a little bit more, get a little bit more distance from the Andrew Garfield stuff, and you're bringing back, this week we learned that you're not only bringing back the same director, you're bringing back the same writing duo, and Freaks and Geeks alum John Francis Daly and Goldstein, and you know, we're gonna do pretty much the same thing as we did on Ant-Man. Same writer, same director, you know, small intimate street level movie, gets a sequel, you know. So if I think, as you say, that when we get to that Spider-Man 2 in July of 2019, I think it's going to have more success. And yes, I think Sony will be happy with that.
Yeah, if they're still a Sony, which, you know, they make curious decisions every day, so I don't know.
Well, so do the North Koreans, but...
yeah, but, like, we can see Sony losing money. It's like they're bleeding out. We watching this in real time.
Bad decision after bad decision after bad decision.
Yeah, the only good decision I can recall them making in the past year or two is this one with Spider-Man. And it's only in this instance with Spider-Man, because every other decision to make with Spider-Man is terrible and is going to cost them more money. But as far as the writers being back, I expected it. So it's not really a shock. I like what they did with Homecoming, and I look forward to seeing what they can do with the sequel. So, if it's not broke, don't fix it. It's pretty much Marvel's claim to fame right now, because if you work on something and it works, they bring you back for the sequels.
Right. And same writing team, so, you know, everything's pretty much lined up. And no word from John Watts that his Homecoming 2 is going to set up the next 30 years of Marvel movies.
I don't think... he's not going to say that, and... that was just so dumb. Don't run with those titles.
Yeah. So, I'm interested to see what they do. I'm interested to see what villain they use, because, of course, Scorpion was kind of dropped there. That Drew Goddard thing is still sitting out there. There's a Sinister Six idea pitch that is out there. I don't know if Sony's looking to utilize that for their standalone universe or not, but, like, there are options. I mean, it's a very large rogues gallery, some of which, you know, resemble WWE personalities from the 1980s. But, you know, they could go any kind of direction for the sequel. And I think they're going to keep the stakes relatively close to home, especially after, you know, the concluding epic series finale.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't do world ending events with Spider-Man. That's not what you do. You do, you know, city kind of events.
City block.
Yeah.
Brooklyn, Queens, Queens level events.
Yeah, but I think you got to bring him into Manhattan this time, because they purposely stayed away from all the web-slinging stuff, because we've seen that before, but you've put him there, let him go to Manhattan.
Well, I mean, Avengers Tower is now, Avengers headquarters is now in northern upstate New York, so.
I think after these next two movies, and with that, I think we get as minimal references to the Avengers as possible, outside of the obligatory one Avengers cameo, which will probably be just a cameo. I don't think it'll be as big as Robert Downey Jr.'s role was in this one, and that wasn't even all that big. So,
no, I mean, my thing is with Spider-Man is, you know, Ant-Man and Spider-Man are their two lowest level movies as far as, like, very intimate. I mean, Ant-Man literally takes place within San Francisco and, yeah, like, and within this very small subset of San Francisco, like, down to a little girl's bedroom.
Yeah.
And, you know, Homecoming takes place very in that borough of New York, even though if they're not really ever truly definitive about where that plane comes down.
Yeah.
And about how far that plane traveled before it went down, and if it was, like, washed up on Long Island, and if it just ended up on, like, Long Island, like, it really didn't get very far. It was not moving very fast for a jet.
Yeah, I think it's their equivalent of Coney Island, so yeah. I don't know how far that is from Manhattan. I assume Avengers Tower's in the middle of Manhattan, and we were in the, we were in Coney Island, so I don't know how that works out, but it wasn't that far.
Right. For a jet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the sequel. I mean, to me, you got to stay away from Doc Ock. You got to stay away from anybody who's been used before. And, you know, to give him a new challenge post-Thanos is going to be really interesting. Because I'm interested in seeing how this character in particular, being so young, is shaped by the death and destruction of Thanos.
Yeah, that is something to think about.
So, some other Marvel news this week. Evangeline Lilly. They celebrated Jack Kirby's 100th birthday, or what would have been his 100th birthday this week, and she was honored to be donning the Wasp suit. So this thing looks totally different from the thing that was in the case at the end of the Ant-Man.
Did you have any doubts?
Yes, I just, like... So, what, you just ditched Mommy's outfit, and you're going to hope that Mommy doesn't want it back?
I mean, maybe they gave that outfit to Mommy, and she, through her upgrades to that, she got a whole different thing. I'm not surprised that it doesn't look the same, but I thought they would at least have her in it for a little bit, and maybe they still will.
Well, the problem that I have with it is the yellow isn't as prevalent in this as what was prevalent in the suit that was in the glass casing. Granted, she's standing in a classroom, so you can't really tell if the, you know, the PEM particles are activated and that's what's yellow in the suit, but
I'm trying to remember. I can't remember. I think Wasp wore yellow, so, but
you want. Yeah, and they've already got their villains, and they're doing, you know, some interesting things with that, because that's going to be the placement of Ant-Man is almost as obtuse as the placement of Homecoming 2, because, like, you're right at, you're 6 weeks after Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah.
And you're going to do Ghost and who's the other villain?
Whoever Walton Goggins is playing, yeah. I can't remember the name, but yeah, you're going from that to back to, again, a city block and, like, very close relationships.
And corporate takeovers and greed, which thankfully the movies have done better than, you know, Iron Fist.
Yeah, good old Iron Fist.
Good old Iron Fist and the Defenders, which both of which just got trashed by everybody.
I don't understand the hate for the Defenders. I thought it was a lot better than Iron Fist. I actually liked it a lot, so y'all can suck it if you didn't like it.
But I mean, like, the Wasp suit looks fine. It was just a shock to my system to see it be something completely different.
Yeah, they tend to change costumes after every movie. So I saw that suit and I wasn't surprised not to see it in this set photo, but it was like, well then why did you like show me this specific one if you were gonna change it?
There was a suit that was shown to Peter Parker that he is going to be in Infinity War. We know this. People have seen footage.
Yeah, I know. He's in that stupid suit. I don't care.
But I mean, like, that is from all the details, it is the specific suit that is shown in that glass casing. So how can Spider-Man get his, you know, Iron Spider suit exactly right, yet, you know, Wasp goes from, like, two totally different things from what's in the case to what she actually wears?
Oh, I can tell you the answer to that. Because the suit we saw in the Homecoming is completely CG, and they were like...
And in the casing it was in was completely CG.
Yeah, so they could just put whatever they wanted there. Like, by the time they were probably finishing this up, they were like, this design Spider-Man's going to wear in Infinity War. I guess we'll just show it to him now. Here, put it in the movie.
The design of the suit that you said would never be used.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wrong. I regret that. No, I don't regret it, because they shouldn't have used it, but whatever.
So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I'm ready, really interested to see what direction they go. And, you know, apparently Douglas is excited about coming back and everybody's excited to come back. The fascinating part for me is when we get to Avengers Infinity War, there are a lot of people on the run as federal, like, wanted people. Yeah. And Scott Lang is one of those. Like, all of Team Cap is still considered fugitives from justice. So, and one of those fugitives from justice is hiding in Wakanda. So...
Yeah, I don't know how they fixed all that before then, but...
Maybe Big Purple Guy comes down and all of a sudden it's like, we don't care! We don't care anymore. Here, you know, I'm General Hurt. Let's, you know, I'm going to go get the Abomination. You guys fixed all this.
Yeah, but then it goes to, well, when does Ant-Man take place? Does it take place right after that? Because we all assume that Avengers 3 is going to end on, like, some version of a cliffhanger where the heroes get their collective asses handed to them. So, how does Scott fit into this? I still don't think he's in 3, because I've never heard them specifically say him for 3.
No, that's what they've been saying. From everything I've been keeping track of my Marvel string theory, from everything I've heard, it's that they don't show up until
4. Okay. So,
which would mean that you would have to get the entire backstory of that in his solo movie.
Yeah. Which is fine. That's fine. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that works after seeing what we're going to see at the end of Avengers 3.
Yeah. So what were your thoughts with the 100th birthday of Jack Kirby and his contributions to comics? What were your thoughts on Mr. Watiti tweeting out a alternate version of the Thor logo?
Well, since... Because
I'm assuming this is the logo as it is presented in the title treatment. Because typically the title treatment logo is different from what's on the posters and the marketing materials.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess they could, because this... I mean, if you look at these trailers, those are Jack Kirby drawings brought to life. So, clearly, he's a heavy influence on this. He was a heavy influence in developing Thor. Anyway...
He's a heavy influence on Doctor Strange as well.
Doctor Strange, he's a heavy influence on most comic history through Marvel and DC. But this movie is, like, straight up saying, this is Kirby... Here it is. So, I mean, it would be a nice... It was nice that they had that... He presented that the title card. I guess it would be even nicer if he actually puts it in the movie. Like, this is clearly Kirby, and we're putting it in there because he would have been 100 this year, and we're recognizing all of his achievements, and this is just the thing to do. I don't know if that's how it's going to come off the pass, but I like the idea of it.
Yeah, I think the look and the design of it still having the bright colors in between the letters, but not being the 1980s, you know, style logo that we've seen on the trailers and on the marketing materials so far, seem to indicate to me that what we're getting is a title, that this will be what was used in the title treatment. When we start Thor Ragnarok, this is the logo that will be presented.
We don't actually get title treatments in Marvel movies till the end.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, so, yeah, because now we just start straight in with, like, prologues.
Yeah. Like, sometimes we might get the Marvel thing first, but, yeah, that's pretty much how it goes.
Yeah. So let's move on from Marvel to another thing that is in the House of Mouse.
Okay.
Star Wars. So, we had Force Friday, too. There were some Snoke toys. The Snoke toys are not that much taller than the Imperial Soldier toys. This gives people hope. Your thoughts on giving people hope through a toy?
I need people to stop looking at toys, trying to figure things out. Because toys are scaled certain ways, and they're not going to make a bigger scale of something unless they're making like a deluxe version. So if this is still in the same line of toys as everything else...
It was a hot toy.
Oh, was it a hot toy? Okay, never mind. Forget everything I just said. Hot toys is different. If it's a hot toy and he's not that much taller than everything else, then that's going to be the size he is when we see him. Because hot toys makes everything to scale from the movie. Because there's a regular Iron Man and there's the Hulkbuster Iron Man. And those things are two completely different sizes.
This is true, but they were also the company that produced Bat-Joker.
They do those little fun variants and stuff too, but normally when it comes to people in the movie, they're all scaled to like their proper sizes.
Be interesting to see. I mean, the fact that we had Force Friday, people poured over every toy announcement, every toy that was out there trying to get clues, and you know, the BB-9s that were out there, which had, you know, some photos of those had been out on different fan sites for a while, because you know, BB droids, I think, are supposed to be this generation's version of R2 units, where there's just variants for both sides. You know, there's the red. There's variants of R2 units in the when the Jawas pick up R2 and C-3PO in A New Hope.
Yep.
Like, same way here. Like, there are Empire BB-8 units, which are black and silver, and there are regular BB-8 units that are orange and white. So, I mean, I don't really think it was that. There was nothing earth-shattering to me that came out.
No. Nor did I expect them to have anything earth-shattering. This is Star Wars. This ain't their first rodeo.
They got you to buy a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Like they always do. Don't be surprised.
The one thing that is interesting to me, though, there is no Snoke lightsaber being produced anywhere. There may not be a Snoke lightsaber.
I mean, but they're not producing a Luke lightsaber either, because we still don't know which one he has.
Well, they're producing a Rey lightsaber, and when they produce a Luke lightsaber, it's still the green one.
What? Have they actually shown us the green one yet?
No. We haven't even in the official photos, we have not even seen him having a lightsaber on his belt.
Yeah. And I think that is very much for a reason. They've officially, the Anakin, which became Luke, which is now Rey's. It's official that they were Rey's. So people know that she has it. That's fine. They'll tell you that all day long. They're not telling you Luke has a saber. And if they're not telling you Luke has a saber, which we haven't seen it, but we assume that he has one.
And we assume that it's green.
The assumption is that it's green, but we have no idea. If Snoke has a lightsaber, they ain't going to show us that until they're good and ready to.
Can you imagine what the fan reaction is going to be the first time he fires that thing up for the first time in like 30 years?
Oh, we're going to lose their mind. I said we're. I'm going to be right there with you. Because I don't think we see him crank that surfer up until like halfway through the movie.
Well, we know that there were those scenes that were shot of him taking on the Knights of Ren.
Yeah, and I don't think we get that. Well, unless there's a flashback, I don't think we get that until the middle of the movie.
Well, I mean, I think he's chasing him. I think he's hunting down Luke Skywalker. So I think he's trying to get to he finds Octu some kind of way. But, I mean, it's going to be interesting to me. Trying to figure out things from toys is like, you know.
It's really kind of useless.
Right.
It's that, and they're scouring over the Topps trading cards. They have, like, little factoids, and they're scouring over that. I read that, I'm like, none of this makes sense unless I think real hard. I'm not trying to do that. No. Bye.
So, Chad, there was a Chinese movie magazine, and they had their Star Wars issue this past week. Do you know who appeared on the cover of their Star Wars episode, their Star Wars magazine?
Is that picture of Luke?
That is that picture of Luke. A very, very angry Luke Skywalker, who looks like you just peed in his cornflakes. Or his blue milk, one of the two.
Are people getting up in arms about him being in those dark colors and thinking that he's...
No. It's just that he looks really... It's a gray robe. So it looks very much like what he is in most of the marketing materials for the film. It's just this heavy Shakespearean, like, Wrath of Khan anger on his face that's, like, drawing people. It looks like a really nice photo of...
It's a nice picture. It's just, you know, from everything we've heard, he's a crotchety old man that has failed, and he knows he's failed, and he's not taking it very well. He's very bitter. That's what I expect a bitter Luke Skywalker to look like. Just like that. So, like, that's a nice picture. And I move on. Because I'm like, this is in line with everything else I've heard.
This is the continuation of the theme that will happen from now until October when we get our new footage. Yep. Breadcrumbs.
Yeah. And people just need to know they're going to give you breadcrumbs. You can take them and appreciate them, or you can take them and cross-examine them under a microscope looking for something else. When all they gave you was a breadcrumb. That's all it is. Take it, enjoy it, move on with life.
Indeed. Speaking of moving on with life, there is a movie studio at Warner Brothers, and they are the home of DC Films, run by Geoff Johns.
Are they really?
The title of our episode last week was DC Makes Chad Sad. So we had a whole episode in which you begged them to have 1 week off. Just 1 week, or you didn't have to talk about DC news. They did not oblige you this week, sir.
Again, so I thought that, you know, the week started and there was just that one nugget about Joss Whedon getting official credit for writing the movie. I was like, you're not acquiescing to my wishes, but this is one thing that kind of fits in everything we already know. It's not that big a deal.
33% according to the Writers Guild of America, which would be a 60-30 split pretty much.
Yeah, which some people are getting up in arms about. I'm like, okay.
Well, if he only wrote 30% of it, the chances of him getting a director's credit would not be great, because he would have to be more than 50% of his creative material in the film in order to even bring that to an issue.
Yeah, and we know that he is filming everything that he wrote. So he's filming 33% of the movie. Is it more than that? We don't know. But again, this falls in line with everything else we've heard. So it wasn't that big a deal. It's like, yeah, we knew he was going to get credit for something. There's no way he's going to get up there, do all this stuff, and they don't give him credit for something. So he's got writer credit. He's probably going to get producer credit. Whoopee. That's fine. Like, I could talk about this. This is fine. Because I'm talking about it right now, and it's fine. It is fine.
And then we get the random little tidbit about Suicide Squad 2 not filming till the fall.
Again, I don't want to talk about this, but this is fine. Because I don't know if this movie is going to happen anyway. It doesn't have a director.
Large cast that you'd have to assemble and work. Schedules you'd have to work around.
I mean, the what they're citing as the reason they're... it's not going to shoot until next year is because Will Smith is working on two movies right now. He's doing Aladdin right now.
Dumbo.
No, he's not doing Dumbo.
Passed on Dumbo.
He's doing Aladdin right now, and there's another movie he's doing right after that.
That is not known as Bad Boys 4.
It is not Bad Boys 4, or 3, whatever it was. So that's the big reason why they're citing this won't start until next fall. Again, I don't want to talk about it, but it's like, okay, this is fine. We knew this movie was coming down the line. They got scheduling issues. It's fine. I can talk about it. Because, again, I'm talking about it right now. And that's it. It's over. And I'm fine. I am fine. This is good.
Small tidbits of DC news that don't have any consequence to them.
And this is when they decided to set my week on fire. Just, like, douse it in gasoline. Just set it on fire.
Some men just want to watch the world burn.
I don't. I want to sit on a rock and watch a peaceful... peaceful lake, no ripples, no nothing. Instead, I'm watching this raging inferno across the pond and just thinking about, wow, these idiots really set their house on fire themselves. And they're wondering why it's, they're sitting outside looking at it like, why is it on fire? I watched you put the match to it. Why do you think it's on fire? You put it on fire.
So Chad, how many times has Ben Affleck been associated with not being the Batman in the last year? So Dawn of Justice was March of 2016. We are now in September of 2017. That is a year and 4 months. Mm-hmm. How many times in that year and 4 months has Ben Affleck not been attached?
At least three.
Yeah.
Probably like four. I'm probably missing one. And two of them have been in the last freaking month.
So he was supposed to direct, and then he wasn't. So then he wasn't going to direct, and then Matt Reeves was going to direct, and then Matt Reeves wasn't going to direct, and then Matt Reeves signed on, and then Ben wasn't going to be the Batman, and then Ben was going to be the Batman because he would crawl on the ground and be an ape for Matt Reeves, and then little brother Casey from Manchester by the Sea decides that he wants to take his Oscar celebrity and let loose a state secret from his brother's career path at the ball game, which really causes Warner Brothers and everybody involved to release statements again, reaffirming Affleck's commitment to the project. And then now we arrive at today.
Yeah, and in between that last part is when the news that Matt Reeves was making a Batman that wasn't in the DCEU, and that feud, this whole Ben is not Batman thing, which made them come out and say again, Ben is Batman. So yeah, that's where we're at, and I was hoping that's where we stood until after Justice League, when everything could finally be clear and we could be done with that. But no, the Hollywood Reporter's reporting again,
and a story that they had already reported once and had to retract,
and now they're reporting it again that Reeves is making a Batman, and it is a standalone Batman. Again, not a part of the DCEU. And with that, Ben Affleck will not be Batman.
How are we in this place when the director came out on Twitter and said, all I'm really meaning is that I'm not having Superman show up in my Batman movie?
Because that's what he implied.
What he said. He said, we are not going to have characters from the other movies populate this movie. It is going to be a standalone in that it is a Batman story. So how do we, if the director of the film is saying on Twitter, without being hacked, it is a Batman movie, Batman will be Batman, there will be no ancillary characters involved, we have a big enough gallery to choose from with our own canon, Wonder Woman is pretty much a standalone movie, has the little Wayne Enterprises armored truck at the beginning. Other than that, it doesn't really have a lot of tangible ties to the overall universe except for the picture. That's what we're going to do, and that's what the guy said on Twitter. So how are we back into this place where we're going to go over that under that new banner, and we're going to do a young Batman movie?
Because you said that new banner. That new banner, if we had no news of this new banner, none of this, like, people would say this, but people would have, like, couldn't go back to reach for something. Because they've claimed this new banner of standalone movies with the characters, but not tied to anything.
And that, played by different actors.
They keep saying standalone. That fits perfectly under this new banner.
But you've also got Ben Affleck repeatedly saying, I will crawl on the ground for Matt Reeves. And implying that it would be his version of Batman.
And he's also said on live TV that I will still be the director of Batman, and a week and a half later we get a press release saying I'm not going
to
be Batman.
But he went to rehab in that week and a half, so he probably had no choice.
It just goes to say that we can't trust his word on this, so why should we trust
him? I'm sure he wanted to direct the movie, and then he was like, I've got to go to rehab, and they were like, we need this movie anyway, we've got to start looking at other directors.
He had a whole lot of things going on
with
his divorce that probably led into the rehab stuff, all the pressures of being Batman, his movie had just bombed, all these things going together. But yeah, it's probably better for him to step away. However, he still, to this point, Ben Affleck has nothing to do right now except promote Justice League come a month and a half from now. But at this point, he is still dealing with, are you in the movie or are you out of the movie? Are you going to be in anything else after all that? He's still getting hounded with all this stuff. Why? Like, if he wants to be free of all that kind of pressure, if he says, I'm done, yeah, he's got a month of people barraging him for all this stuff, but then he's clear.
But that damages your Justice League, which is going to have a very popular Batman in it, which will no longer be the case. But I think we are at... And the thing about it also is mainstream audiences have no idea of this Raging Inferno.
No.
But we are getting and approaching a point where Warner's is going to have to put out an official statement and have an official position on this. That you cannot continue to allow leaks to the Hollywood Reporter about this thing and that thing. You have to have a clear, unified, top-down, okay, studio level, Ben level, agent level, this is the deal. He's going to be in Justice League. The Batman will be this standalone movie and under this new banner. And that's what we're doing. Affleck's Batman probably won't show up anywhere again. You know, we're just going to continue making other DCEU movies. The Batman will fit under this new banner. The Joker origin movie will fit under this new banner. And we'll just go from there. Or you need to definitively come out and say, top down, Ben Affleck is contractually committed to a Batman standalone movie directed by Matt Reeves within the canon of the DC Expanded Universe. And it is not under this new 52 banner.
So at the heart of their problem is the fact that Warner Brothers, particularly when it comes to DC, doesn't know what they're doing. As much as I've tried to defend them, at this point, it's like, okay, Chad, look around you. You're in the burning house. Do you really want to be the dog that's saying, that's fine? Because clearly, it's not. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they want. And I think the power structure within WB is such that people have certain aspirations and want to see certain things, which is why we get all these leaks. So, as an entity, they don't know what they want to do with this property. They've already sailed down this course, and they don't know if this course is sustainable or not, except they have this outlier in Wonder Woman, which is this big thing, which they should be like, let's make some more like this. We just have to get past this iceberg. But some of them are like, screw this, let's make standalone stuff. And nobody's at the top is saying, no, we're going to do this. And what this should be is, you see Wonder Woman?
But I thought Johns was supposed to be the savior of the universe.
But he could be. I think we need somebody with more producer experience. But he could be creatively. However, it's a power structure, as you said. And it starts at the top. Johns is somewhere. He's not even in the middle. He's like a rung lower than the middle. He still has to answer somebody. And they're not. Well, I think his boss, I think her name is Diane Nelson. I think she would give him carte blanche to do whatever he wants. The people at the top are still like, I don't know. So we've got this faction that wants this and this faction that wants this. And the person at the top, they refer to as the roller coaster man, which says how much respect they have for him. So if you're not respecting the head, the body just go wither and die. And we're watching it wither and die right now. So that's kind of where we're at.
We're fastly, sir, approaching Fantastic Four territory.
So, I think within the factions, I think we have enough people that want things to do well that I still think Justice League will be salvageable. It's just going to be, once we get to that point, what do we want to do? But they've already split it off so many different ways. I think Wonder Woman will continue.
Starting at freaking Comic-Con, where you drop like 15 different movies and you don't give release dates or anything with them.
Because they're so schizophrenic. They don't know what the hell they want to do.
There was no mention of this new 52 banner anywhere.
Again, so freaking reactionary. Like, they could have been in prelim talks with all this stuff. Like, maybe we really can't explore this. And somebody heard about it and like, I don't like this. Hollywood Report.
Jordan Vault Rogers. Remember Mark Millar on Twitter? I'm hearing Warner Brothers is taking
this
pitches.
Yeah.
I'm hearing Warner Brothers is taking pitches on a Red Sun movie. And Jordan Vault Rogers was like, yo, bro, Like, I finished Kong Skull Island, I went to them immediately and pitched a Red Sun movie. They laughed me out of the building, told me they weren't doing it. They had their plans. And then Mark Miller at Millar is like, yeah, bro, you might want to give them a call back. I hear they're taking pitches from people.
Which goes to show you, just that quick, they changed their minds. And it probably is not all of them changing their minds. It's just some that's like, let's do this pitch and let's do this. And then maybe Red Sun didn't get far enough where people were like, oh, this is really going to happen. But you say it's Scorsese, and he's got, and you know, Warner Brothers, you say auteur, and they're like, ooh, let's go. So you say Scorsese and Joker, and they're like, ooh, this probably can happen. And then the other person that heard them pitch Red Sun, it was like, last them out the building, like, oh, they're seriously going to do this. Hollywood Reporter.
The monkeys are driving the car. Yeah,
the monkeys are driving the car, they want to do this. Hollywood Reporter, go ahead and put this out there. And that's how you get all this stupid madness. And it's frustrating because the parts they have right now can make a great DC universe. And they can go and they can make standalone movies, much like you said with Wonder Woman. You could take out the first 5 minutes of that movie, put it out, still a coherent standalone movie, but you know she ties into the Justice League. She ties into this DCEU.
She shows up in Dawn of Justice. She has the photo. The photo is the basis of the flashbacks, which leads you to the movie. And that with the picture comes from a Wayne Enterprises armored car. And off we go into the flashbacks. And then that leads into her showing up.
And you can do that with everyone else. It doesn't have to be as...
Suicide Squad has Batman as basically Weller's... henchman.
Yeah.
And it has that end scene cameo with Affleck getting information on the other members of the Justice League from her.
But you
know, that's minimal ties.
Yeah. But you don't even have to do that. Like, everybody thinks Guardians is so interconnected, but I mean, not Guardians. Marvel is so interconnected with all of their movies, but Guardians is purely standalone stuff. Yeah,
but the only way that Guardians ties back in is Peter Quill is from Earth, and they're responsible for all the shading of Thanos to this point.
Yeah. But other than that, it's standalone. You don't have to, layer in stuff.
I mean, the Collector is going to be responsible. We know the Collector is responsible for at least one Infinity Stone. So that kind of ties it in. But it's not... Marvel has learned from the Iron Man 2 experience that they can't be super heavy-handed.
Yeah. You can go from doing nothing at all to just doing, the tags before and after and be done. That's it. And
that's what they did.
And you can make your standalone movies. People can make whatever movie they want with these characters. The only thing that doesn't have to happen is people can't die. That's it. So, what's the problem? But clearly, Warner Brothers doesn't know what the hell they want to do. And they're driving my blood pressure up, and I just want them to stop.
So, you get the Affleck news again. This is a situation where a week ago... or whenever 2 weeks ago when the Reeves podcast got found by the nerds on Reddit and then went viral, and then he had to come back and he had to make his clarification on Twitter. That was about the same time there were these whispers about a Hollywood Reporter story which had been reported and then retracted, and various movie sites had to make decisions about whether or not to run with that content after the story was retracted or before the story was retracted. And this was that story, that Affleck, again, was out. And so we're dealing with that. And then now, this morning, we get news on that Joker origin movie. Who is Martin Scorsese's favorite actor to work with?
Be Leonardo DiCaprio.
The man who's tied to a Captain Planet movie as a producer.
He's tied to, a Robotech movie, too. He's, really into that.
Yeah. Okay. I would pay good money to see Leonardo DiCaprio take on the role of Captain Planet in Trump's America.
Oh, that'd be fun. That's their front runner for this Joker, and just taking it in a vacuum, just as news, you know.
That fits. These pieces fit.
Yeah.
Todd Phillips, War Dogs, you know, that kind of a thing. You know, Scorsese with his connections and ties to... To Leo. You've got the MMA fighter going on the Joe Rogan podcast talking about my agent's, boys with the writer, and the writer says it's going to be real dark, bro. Going to be a dark movie, bro. And you have the makings of a potential Academy Award flair Joker movie. The only problem with that is there's a guy who's currently playing the Joker who just signed on to a spinoff movie who ain't too happy with the idea of Leo coming in and doing this thing better.
Yeah, so I heard that late. And just... I don't blame Jared Leto. I mean, he has his own Academy Award, but, I mean, it's Leo is Leo. And if Leo's teaming with Scorsese, and he got teamed with... David Ayer. I think who is this fight?
And most of his scenes got cut from the movie.
Most of the scenes got cut, and he hasn't been the most well received Joker. Who do you think is going to win that fight? People are going to want to see Leo, and I don't blame him for being upset. But this whole little mini feud that's brewing leads into the effect of why even do this, because people are going to see this Joker movie and they're like, I like him as a Joker. Well, one, they'll be like, where's the other guy? Two,
Leo is doing this really well.
This is really good. I want to see Ben Affleck punch him in the face. And then they're going to be like, but why is this guy back as a Joker for something else? You're begging to have this confusion. You're begging fans to not understand you. Then you're begging the fans to be like, I don't know what's going on. I'm out. Why bring that on yourself? Why? Besides your, freaking idiots, but why?
Because I think part of this is there's twofold here. I think one, we're dealing with a subset of people who believe the way that Jordan Vault Rogers articulated a few weeks ago on Twitter, which is, this is the next step. This is the way you differentiate yourself from Marvel. This is the next step. Alt worlds, alternate timelines, alternate realities, schisms, things where you can have completely different events happening, completely different cast, and that audiences are ready to take that leap. Comic book fans, comic book nerds like me and you, we're used to it, we've had it for years, and he believes, and they believe, that small subsection of people believe that generalized audiences are ready for that and they can handle it. The most visceral defense I hear is that people understand that the Fantastic Four movies, while they may have Marvel in front of them, are not MCU movies. So you could potentially, they see Deadpool and they see Fox and they see Marvel, but they know Deadpool isn't in the MCU. That those kinds of things, that that Deadpool and X-Men separation, that audiences are okay with that. So if they can process that information, certainly they can process the information that, we're going to give you a whole new guy cast as Superman, and he actually landed in Moscow instead of Kansas. And, this is what would have happened. And it's not Henry Cavill, and it's not tied to anything else. That's the defense that they use. I think the other thing about it, too, is I think there are executives in that company in Warner Brothers who are trying to find a parachute. I think they're, or a lifeboat in this case, because we're using the ship metaphor, right? They think that this ship cannot survive past Justice League. That they believe that Justice League will do irreparable enough damage to where all the goodwill that Wonder Woman built up will be gone. It'll be another calendar year before we get to Aquaman, and in that year, people and audiences will just lose interest in all hope for a giant DC expanded universe will be gone. So if this thing's the Titanic and it's gonna sink, then we need to go back to the shipyard and we need to start building a second ship so that we can still get across this ocean and be making money and get to where we want to get to. And so those people who want to build a new ship meet up with those people who say that audiences are ready for an alternate timeline, and DC is much more steeped in that kind of history than Marvel is anyway. And you get this idea. And then people who are trying to still pilot that giant Titanic ship and try and steer it away from the iceberg and still see hope and prosperity in the future are hearing and seeing these guys bailing and going back to the shipyard to build another ship. And they're going, yo, bros, they're abandoning ship. Let's call them out on it. And so you get what you get.
So the last part I agree with. I agree with all that. But I think it's stupid.
It is stupid, because it's not a one unified... They're not. Everybody is not on the ship trying to steer it away from the iceberg, which is where you should be right
yes.
now. You should be all hands on deck, Captain White, getting the iceberg warnings and going, okay, let's steer away from these icebergs. Get through Justice League, secure all your talent, lock them up under contract for however many retainers you need, and let's go forward. Let's use Wonder Woman as the template, let's let Juan get his stuff done with Aquaman, and let's spend the next year hunkering down, trying to figure out all these different projects that we just announced at Comic-Con in July. That's where we should be. Everybody on the same boat going in the same direction. Unfortunately, that's not where we are. People have bailed, they've gotten on life rafts, and they're back at the shipyard trying to make another ship.
Because, I mean, you can sink this ship. But if you sink this ship, you've got another one. We've proven it before with DC stuff. These characters, people know them. They love them.
Have we really, though? Have we really? Because Quest for Peace bombs out the Superman franchise until Superman Returns. And the Superman Returns bombs out the franchise until Man of Steel. But there's still a large gap between... Superman Returns and Man of Steel, and there's even a larger gap between Quest for Peace and Superman Returns. Batman cratered with Batman and Robin, but even there, it was a fairly lengthy gap between 1998 and 2005. So, like, yeah, they rebirthed these characters, pardon the pun, but they do it over an extended course of time. They can no longer afford to go 5 years without making a Batman movie. They can no longer afford to go 15 years without making a Superman movie.
But if they crash this boat, and they've already built the second boat, that they're going to crash that one too. So now instead of waiting the 5 years, you're going to have to wait like 10. So ride it out with Justice League. Even if that craters, you've already made Aquaman. That's coming out.
Yeah, and spend the next year trying to spin it.
Yeah, it might be a year.
Spend the next year between, because Aquaman's December 2018. Spend the next year from November of 17 to December of 18 hunkering down in Burbank with Johns, with a creative team, hammering out scripts and story ideas for, deep breath, Suicide Squad 2, Man of Steel 2, The Batman, Shazam, Black Adam, Flashpoint, Cyborg, Green Lantern Corps. Let's see, what else am I missing?
And see right there? That's just too goddamn many.
That's like eight, and that's just off the top of my head.
For what they're trying to do right now, that's too many.
Flashpoint, that's nine.
Where you at right now, you make... Aquaman's already being made. You make the Batman.
And Shazam has already got a director.
Shazam's already got a director. You can make that one fine. Wonder Woman 2 is the no-brainer of no-brainers in all this. And... make one more. If it was me, it'd be Man of Steel 2, because you have your Trinity is a good Trinity. Superman keeps getting the shafts. You put him in a movie, you make those five movies, and then after that...
A Man of Steel 2 directed by Matthew Vaughn.
Please. Yeah. But... it goes to the head. They have no institutional leadership. If Suji Hara thinks he's leading. People clearly don't respect him, and everything is being run amok, and it's all going to crash and burn. All of it.
Because I don't think that there is a way for that ship, with all the goodwill and all of the harbors of peace and justice that we got from Wonder Woman, the stability that Wonder Woman brought to the DCEU, I don't think all of that can be chipped away from the side of that iceberg. And enough damage is going to be done to sink the ship. I think it can nick it up, but I think it can turn, and I think James Wan's Aquaman, which nothing but good things came out of that Comic-Con panel, I think that can continue us on back on this straight and narrow course, which can reap... No, you're not going to be able to get to a Justice League 2 by 2020, which is what Marvel did, right? Marvel did it 3 years later. They're not going to be able to do that quickly. But what you can do, as you said, build up the characters around it. Flash, Aquaman, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. Build those standalone universes and then bring them back together when everybody's back whole and healthy and in a properly a proper place.
Yeah, I mean, outside of Justice League just being a completely incoherent movie, which it has a chance to be with all the problems it has, if that movie is Batman vs. Superman, but you make people like Superman a little bit better, and you take away Bird of Bat a little bit less, people might not like it all the way, but it'll be better received than that. And I think if you can get to that, it'll be nicked up, but you get past this iceberg.
Right. And I think that it'll be a totally inconsistent movie, a very interesting product of two directors. And I think we'll get through it. We'll get through the press tour. And like I said, if it was me, I would just continue steering that ship in the next year for Aquaman. Between Justice League and Aquaman, I'd spend the next year focused on making Shazam the best Shazam it can be and educating people on who the hell the character is. And I would spend the time helping James Wan, making sure James Wan has all the creative freedom that he needs, making sure he has all the money that he needs to make the best Aquaman movie possible. And then we go from there. I would be working with Matt Reeves, talking to Matt Reeves, understanding what he's doing and where he is in his process, and making sure everybody's on the same page there. That's what I would do from November of 17 to December of 18. That's what I would do. Mm-hmm. And I think that would greatly benefit your DCEU.
Yep.
Because the race is won. Marvel's kicked your butt. They're going to have the conclusion of their cinematic universe before you even get to a second Justice League movie. So stop trying to compete. Stop trying to out box office. And just make good films.
It should have never been a race. I know it in our minds is the whole thing because it's always been DC and Marvel. But it should have never been a race.
For the executives, it was a race. Because why do you think we're at Justice League after three movies?
I still think that they could have done Justice League and done it better than they've done it so far. I don't think they had to go the Marvel
way. There's no way you could have done Justice League with Zack Snyder and had it turn out well.
Well, I'll concede that fact, but that's because it's...
Marvel took from 2008 to 2012, 4 years to get there. Yeah, but they did six movies. Iron Man, Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor, Cap. Five movies between start of universe and standalone movie and group movie, come together movie. They're going to have Man of Steel, divisive movie, Batman vs. Superman, divisive movie, Wonder Woman, universally beloved movie, and then Justice League. Man of Steel was 2013?
It's been like, it'll be 4 years. Well, actually, Man of Steel was done in 12, so like 4 or 5 years.
Right.
That they've had to do this.
But, you know, Dawn of Justice is March, and Wonder Woman is March of 16, Wonder Woman is June of 17, and Justice League is November of 17. So that's like three movies within 14 months.
Yeah. But that's because they crapped the bed with the first one, and it was too late at that point. Well, not the first, the second one, technically.
Yeah. They were rushing to do their Batman movie and their Superman movie.
Which, honestly, they didn't really rush it. Like, I was watching...
They shoot that thing for a year.
I was watching the special features on Wonder Woman, and Gal said she got cast for Wonder Woman in 2012, which would have been the year... Man of Steel hadn't even came out then, which meant... And we know she screen tests with Ben Affleck, which meant he was cast in 2012. That means he was Batman. He's been Batman not for 4 years, but five. That means they had this plan before Man of Steel even came out. If you had 3 years to get that right, and this is what you gave me, this is not a rush job. This is just you being stupid.
This is you giving the keys to the kingdom to a madman.
And again, I like Zach, but...
Zach is the equivalent of the crazy guitar guy who plays his guitar and flames shoot out of the back of his car in Mad Max Fury Road.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
And you're surprised when you give that guy the keys and you end up wrecked.
I'm not mad at them giving him the keys for Batman vs. Superman after Man of Steel, because I love Man of Steel. But I am mad that they were like, we're just going to hunker down on this and let Zach have free reign, and then we're going to start the biggest movie of our lives a week after, not even three days after his next movie.
Were they shooting?
Well, they were supposed to shoot, so then they screwed themselves.
All right, well, that will about do it for this week's episode, as Chad has once again successfully had his soul crushed by DC.
They just make it stop, man. Like, just 1 week. Just one. And I know these... I know my requests are coming. They're, like, it's getting to a point where there's not going to be a choice because Justice League is about to come out. So, like, in the next 3 weeks, can y'all shut up?
Oh, not just that. I have a funny feeling Matthew Vaughn's going to get some questions on the Kingsman press tour about not only a Kingsman 3, but whether or not he's talked to Warners about a Man of Steel 2.
So, next week, can next week be the week that we don't talk about DC? That's my only request.
All right, that'll about do it for this week's episode. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at DCW Tiger Fan.
At the Mets Theory.
And to let you guys know, we are efforting an interview with a member of the director, a representative of the Directors Guild of America, to kind of hammer out some of these dispute questions that we've had about, you know, how credits are given and that kind of a thing. So hopefully that'll be in the coming weeks. You can look for that. All right, thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.